Hi, everyone. Welcome to Washington Game Changers. And I'm Lori Hennessy, League of Education Voters CEO. And we use this podcast as an opportunity to talk to people who are doing great things in the community. We've had some wonderful guests over the last year, I guess, of podcasts now. And after a brief summer break, we're back. And we are back with someone who I'm really excited to talk to because so many of the issues that I'm sure will come up are issues that are really important to me. Cindy Black, hi. Nice to see you.
Hello, Lori. Thanks for having me.
So Cindy's with Fix Democracy First, which I think is a fantastic name of an organization that just is one of those names that says really what it should be saying. So before we talk about what you do and what you're involved with, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been working with Fix Democracy First for about 6 years now. Prior to that, I was the campaign director for Initiative 735, calling for a constitutional amendment that would reverse Citizens United, mm-hmm. which many people know about that decision from 2010. Before that, I had a very eclectic work history. I've worked as a independent sales rep for art supplies. I ran a call center. And a long time ago, I used to be a marriage and family counselor. So I've had various different careers over the years, but I've ended up doing this democracy work, which I really enjoy.
So tell me about Fix Democracy First. The website for anyone who cares about everything from millennials and younger people voting to women voting, women running for office, election reform. There are so many issues that I found on there. I could spend hours on the site. What's kind of the broad way you refer to what your organization does, covering all those things?
Well, we're a nonpartisan organization that works on pro-democracy reform, civic education, with the goal of helping establish good policies that benefit the people and not the power of big money and special interests. So that's our main goal. And like you said, we do a variety of programs. We have both a 501c4 to do advocacy work and lobbying work. So I lobby with the legislature on various pro-democracy bills. But then we have a 501c3 that focuses on civic education, like you mentioned, youth outreach, providing training for women running for office, as well as just general things about like educating the public about what's happening in our democracy.
So let's start there. You and I first crossed paths at a meeting of the 34th Legislative District Women, or the West Seattle Women's Club of 34th District. I forgot which of the groups
West
it was.
Seattle Democratic Women.
There you go. Yeah, I'm involved with the 34th, which is Vashon and West Seattle. And Powerhouse Ann Martin is the person who invited me to go to that meeting. But as I was hearing you, I got very excited and I started sending you chats like, oh my gosh, we have to do a podcast about this. That day you were talking about dark money. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I was talking about dark money because that's a way that, moneyed interests are able to funnel money into elections without having to disclose who they are. Mm-hmm. So it usually goes through a nonprofit organization like a 501c4 organization, and we aren't able to track that money. Luckily, here in Washington State, we've worked on and passed a couple of really strong disclosure bills that definitely shine some light on that. But it's been a big issue because most of the public doesn't know where a lot of this big money is coming from. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of effort to find that out. It's not open to the public necessarily.
So the other issue that I saw, which seems to be very important through looking at your website, and also just I'm hearing more and more about it, is this issue of ranked voting. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What's that about, and what's the issue what's the engagement you're now doing around that?
Sure. So we've identified, along with many others, is that the way we vote is a significant issue in contributing to polarization, some of the money issues, and why we only have a two-party system where other people outside of that two-party system aren't able to get elected hardly ever. I mean, there's some cases that happens. So ranked choice voting would change the way we vote. So instead of just picking one person on a ballot, you would list all the candidates and you get to rank them in order of your preference. So your first choice, second choice, and third choice, and so on. Alaska just had their very first ranked choice voting election just recently. And it just shows that what happens is they had three candidates. The candidate with the lowest amount of votes was eliminated. And then their second, everybody that voted picked a second choice. Those were added to the tally. You don't have to rank your choices on a ranked choice ballot, but it's recommended because it keeps your ballot alive longer. We saw that in Alaska where a lot of people didn't have a second choice. So they could have provided a second choice and that would have maybe changed the tally different, but it's an exciting way to change how we vote and make things more representative because the winner has to get at least 50% plus one approval. So right now here in Washington state, it's going to be on the ballot in three locations on the city of Seattle. It's going to be a couple of questions that they ask you. Do you think we should change how we vote in Seattle? And then the second choice is, should we adopt an approval voting system or a ranked choice voting system? We support the ranked choice voting system because it just has a longer track record and a history of being very effective, like getting rid of negative campaigning.
That's what I was going to ask. What are the benefits of doing ranked choice?
So in the other two places, just quickly mentioned San Juan and Clark County, it'll be on the ballots there. So it'll be on the ballot three. But some of the benefits of ranked choice voting, as I mentioned, is it eliminates negative campaigning or at least reduces it significantly. So if you're a candidate and you're walking down the street to canvas and you see somebody else's yard sign, your opponent's yard sign, instead of walking past, you would go and knock on the door. I see you're supporting so-and-so, but hey, would you be interested in picking me as your second choice? Because oftentimes you need those second rankings to be able to win an election. So it just eliminates candidates bad mouthing other candidates because you may want to win over some of those voters as well. The other thing too is it practically eliminates the spoiler effect. So if you do have a third party candidate and you really support them, you can with confidence vote for them and pick your second or third choices, and it won't impact the election in a way that would eliminate maybe a second choice candidate you have over that. It may, you know, definitely some people you go definitely don't want elected, right? So that just enables you to give more choice. It also keeps your ballot alive a lot longer. And there's a lot of other benefits that we're seeing. We also see more women, more people of color, lower income folks, all getting elected more with this type of system. And ultimately, we're interested in more of a proportional system, but like many other democracies in the world have, and we see this as one step to get closer to that. I could do a whole program just
What's the coalition that's come together? Is there a new coalition now or a website people should be going to hear more about this?
Yeah, there is a coalition. Fair Vote Washington is actually the lead organization, but we're a member of Washington for Equitable Representation. And that is a great place to just see we're coming together to work on getting ranked choice voting, as well as eventually proportional representation. But we also support other issues like public funding of elections and other pro-democracy reforms as well.
That's great. So one thing that everyone hears about all the time is this whole idea that younger generations don't vote. It's almost sort of like this unfair stereotype that a lot of people carry around, like baby boomers vote less than the greatest generation did. But people have, I think, in their mind, this continuum of plunging voting. And I've seen some statistics in the last year or so that don't bear that out. Can you talk a little bit about A, is that an unfair stereotype? Do younger people vote? But B, what do we do? What are you doing so that we can drive voter engagement for younger generations?
Yeah, so there is some truth to the fact that younger voters tend to vote less often than older voters, especially older white voters. And that is true in the city of Seattle and other places around the country. But we are seeing a big uptick in young people getting more interested, especially with the variety of issues that are going on in the world right now. They are getting more involved. So we're seeing a big increase in younger voters participating in elections, not to the levels we'd like to see eventually. But I think part of the problem has been that civics education has been reduced in our schools. Mm-hmm. We really need to beef that up. We hope to introduce a bill with other organizations this coming legislative session that would require more funding and more classes for civic education. I believe it should be taught with reading and math and science and all those other core subjects, because we really are interested in growing voters to become lifelong civic participants. And we do have a program called YoVote. That's focused on engaging youth and going into the classrooms. And we're hoping to expand the program in the coming year or two to engage students at a very young age to say, you should care about voting now, because the people that you may not be able to vote them, but they are representing you. They are passing policies that have an impact on you, whether it's school funding, healthcare, funding for your parks and recreation, a variety of different things. And that local elections are just important, if not important, more important sometimes than even the national election. So that is one of the things that we're trying to do. And now that we can register, pre-register 16 and 17 year olds, that's a great way to engage students as well and get them interested early on.
Yeah, totally. I have some of my best memories are being engaged at a very young age, like in college, getting very active, and then seeing my kids as we kind of gave them early lessons in being politically active. And I do believe it takes root. And I've often wondered about kids who don't get that, who don't have that kind of civic training. And then when do you find that? I mean, do you?
Well, you know, I just to follow up on that, one of the things that we talk about when we go into the classroom about why voting matters is that they can encourage people in their family to vote. Ask them about voting. Did you get, because here in Washington, we get a mail-in ballot, right? So did you ask your parents, did they get their ballot? Are they voting? Talk to them about it. So just begin to engage their family and friends and neighbors on the topic, that they can get involved early on and encourage others that maybe have not voted in their family to actually let them know how it impacts them and how they would really like them to vote. So kind of in voting ambassadors. So
That's great. You know, women are another demographic that I think we've talked about that we're both very passionate about. And I'm on the board of National Women's Political Caucus, and we do trainings and also reach out to people, both to get people educated, but more importantly, or equally importantly, get women to get trained and run. And it's very powerful to see how that's starting to shift, I think, around our country. This is an issue that you've had engagement around as well, right? In terms of getting women elected and getting them trained.
Yes. In fact, we started a program this year called Women in Office Now, or ONE for short. And we hosted 12 training modules on various parts of why women should run, picking a campaign team, campaign finance, fundraising, and a variety of other topics to encourage women to want to run for office. We are very interested in gender parity in government. Women make up a little more than half the population, but in most places, we are drastically underrepresented in a variety of places. Here in Washington State, we've done a much better job in some places, like we have 2 female senators, we have a majority women representatives in Congress. But when it comes to the state legislature or county commissions or county boards and a variety of other places, women are not as well represented. So we really are interested in gender parity, in particular also recruiting younger women, women of color, lower income women to step up and run for office so their voices can be heard. So we're very excited about that. We got a fund from what's called the Ascend Fund to do this program, and we're hoping to continue it. And now we're looking at other training topics to move forward. But People are welcome to check that out on our website. If you go to fixdemocracyfirst.org, under programs, you'll find about our YoVote program, our youth outreach program, as well as our Women in Office Now program. And all the modules have been put online, so you can check those out.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, I think the I was thinking about the other day, just the change in my professional career and how women are seen in the workplace. I often, when I give talks, I always share this funny story about how I was interviewing for a job at one point, maybe 20 years ago. And the person said, the man said when he was interviewing me, "So how many kids do you have?" And at the time I had three that were young. And I said, "Here are their ages." And he said, "Oh, that's a lot of runny noses." And it was just such an amazing thing to be part of a period in time where someone still in a job interview setting. And at the time, I remember I talked to my husband, I was like, "You have no idea what this is like carrying that as a woman." And I think women in office, that has to be something that scares some women from running. How do you manage to have both parts of your life in a world where people still think women has to be the lead as the mom?
Yeah. Well, we need to provide a support network for women. One of the things we talked about when we were doing the trainings is that you can support women by offering to, you know, make a meal for them, drop it off at their house, or watch their kids for a while. Luckily, right now, you can actually use your campaign funds to fund childcare if you're doing any campaigning. So that's a really benefit for women, because money issues are one of the drawbacks for women running for office. So there's a lot of ways we can provide to support to women while they're running for office by just asking them what they need, helping out, you know, going in and cleaning their house or watching their kids or making a meal or things like that. So if you know women running for office and you want to support them, those are some of the ways you can do that, as well as giving them money, obviously. But there's a lot of other ways that you can support women running for office and yourself too. And we also recommend that women think about running for boards and commissions. A lot of important policies happen and get influenced by those. And that's a great way to get an entry into what it's like to be in a leadership position.
How do you, what do you tell young people who you meet with in your travels who are cynical? You know, that there's a lot facing the generation after us, whether it's climate change or increasing unrest, things like democracy being threatened. There's a lot. I mean, what do we tell people so they can still roll up their sleeves and do the good work and stay engaged in this kind of tired period?
Well, I'm hopeful, because one of the things I tell people is that you're not alone. A lot of us have felt really, you know, concerned about what's going on in the world, but you have a say, you have a voice, you can make a difference. You know, join with an organization, talk to your friends and family about things, get involved in some way, even if it's just a small way, even if you just, you know, put in an hour or two a month or something like that. There's always something we can do, and that you're not alone, that a lot of people feel the exact same way, and together we can make a huge difference.
I just realized my internet is again unstable, so I'm calling an audible and moving with you closer to my router. So Cindy, what, any other ideas you would give people here as we kind of wrap things up? What's one thing that someone could do if they've never been involved before, if they've never been part of our political process? For a lot of people, it's just a lot to begin. It's a lot to start. Yes. Where do you tell them to start?
I tell them they should look at local organizations, whether it's Fixed Democracy First or West Seattle Democratic Women, that where we met, or any other group. There's a variety of different groups out there. Some are partisan based, some are nonpartisan, but find one that fits for you. Like, look around, see what people are doing. Maybe it's something around climate change or education or some other important issue that you really care about. But reach out to an organization, get on their mailing list, attend maybe some of the events. A lot of events are virtual right now, so that's an easy way to get involved. We host a weekly democracy happy hour on Wednesdays at 5 o'clock. That's I go over democracy stuff in the news, then we have a topic of the week, and then we have open discussion. But it's a great way to connect with people that feel the same way you do. I share a lot of different ways people can get involved. There's also a lot of national organizations people can get involved, whether it's phone banking, text banking, writing postcards, doing outreach to other places that may need some support or candidates that you support. So there's a variety of ways to do that. But I would just start researching online issues that you're interested in and finding out local groups where you live and just reach out to them and get involved that way. You just take the first step into it. You can decide exactly what you want as you go along.
Yeah, we also have a 501c3 and a C4 at League of Education Voters. And what we have found,
League of Education Voters, that's another
organization. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we have found that a lot of in the past, parents have been this huge mobilizing force. Whether it was trying to equalize the way our school levies work, whether it was getting more pay for teachers or addressing class size, there's been a lot of amazing mobilization parents have done. And the pandemic has not helped any parent because, you know, everyone's taxed and overwhelmed. And if you have time to think, you're thinking about how your kids' mental health is, how they're even coping with this new strange world. So it's going to be interesting as we're coming out of this, whatever that means to come out of this, to try to find ways to do more mobilizing again, as we are coming off of Zoom, you know, to get people more into actually working the issues in the community. Because a lot of people are just tired.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think going forward, what the pandemic did is it created a place for people to do outreach to people maybe they wouldn't necessarily interact with, because anybody can join Zoom anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
So I think the hybrid version is going to be here to stay for a long time. So that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
So you'll have some people attending virtually, some people in person, and then they'll provide more and more of that. I'm seeing that all over the place. But it is about getting involved in a way that you think will benefit, you know, society in some way, or your community, or whatever the issue might be. Mm-hmm. But just know that you can make a difference. Everybody can truly make a difference just by taking some small steps to get involved and, you know, not hide behind your screen all the time, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Where can people find out more about Fix Democracy First?
Yeah, if you go to fixdemocracyfirst.org, all spelled out, you can sign up for our emails. You can find out about our programs. You can look at our history, some of the bills that we've worked on and helped pass, and a variety of other information and resources. But that's a great way to do it. Under our resource, we have a lot of various organizations listed, so you can check out all of them. A lot of them are Washington-based, but we're also connected to a lot of the national organizations as well.
That's great. Well, I am inspired whenever I talk to people who are doing good in the community. It really, it helps me during this crazy time to see all the good that's being done. And like I said, anyone who needs to feel inspired should go to your website and just see all the different fronts that you are attacking. I think it's very impressive because all of these things are part of the larger puzzle of what we need to be doing. And just to go back from where we started, to go back to the dark money angle again, not to put you on the spot, tell me one thing that people might not know, that people might be surprised by in terms of how we actually fund our political machinery, something that people would not have any idea in terms of dark money. Because I know it's right now it's a phrase people have heard of, but I don't know if they know what it means.
Well, a lot of people think it came out of the Citizens United decision, but it actually came out of a lower DC court decision, speechnow.org. So if you want to read more about that and how super PACs were developed, and that really enabled a lot of dark money. But go back to something I originally said to expand on is most dark money groups operate under the nonprofit world. So they don't get taxed. And they usually have friendly sounding names like Freedom for You or whatever it might be. So Washingtonians for Puppies, you know, see any kind of, you know, friendly sounding name, you have to peel back the layers to find out, well, who's actually funding this? Where are they located? What are they actually doing? And that's been a big issue, is that because of the way they funnel the money, it's very difficult to know what's happening. Luckily, here in Washington, I mentioned we passed two good bills, one in 2018 and one in 2019. We passed the Disclose Act of Washington that requires nonprofit organizations that spend over a certain amount of money to disclose their top donors if they're participating in a campaign. And then following year, a PAC to PAC, which is Political Action Committee. So if one PAC gives to another PAC, they can't just say that it, they list the PAC name, like, which is another friendly sounding name. They actually have to list top donors. So it, it peels off some of the layers of that dark money so we can shine a light on it. And we have now some of the best campaign finance laws in the country. I think we were at the top of the list of campaign finance rules and regulations. And we have a good attorney general's office that will go after, you know, groups that are not doing what they're supposed to doing in disclosing their donors.
Have you ever worked with Common Cause nationally?
Yes, I'm on several coalitions with Common Cause. I talk to them pretty regularly. We do not have a Common Cause chapter in our state. We're kind of the default organization that's similar to Common Cause. They're a big national organization. Yeah. We're just one organization, a statewide one, but we work with them all the time. We also work heavily with the League of Women Voters, as well as all our other coalitions, Washington Voting Justice Coalition, Voting
Rights. So many coalitions. If you ever cross paths with Karen Hobart Flynn, who is the CEO of Common Cause, she was my roommate in Washington, D.C.
I see her on meetings from time to time.
Tell her I said hi. She and I were roommates 30 years ago. So we both were young people in D.C. She's done fine.
I'll mention that to her if I run across her at an upcoming meeting.
Well, it's been delightful talking to you. I just love what you do. And I just want to say thank you so much for being, you know, one person just making a lot of difference with your life. That's very inspiring.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.